Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and effectively turn any negative emotional state that I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted with. You can also download the actual tool itself completely free. Just click on the PDF file, download it, print it off, use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. They can serve as a tutorial for you on how to use this to best advantage in a variety of situations. And you can go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. Also this year, we are working through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. Today is the 159th day of the year, and today's lesson reads, I give the miracles I have received. No one can give what he has not received. To give a thing requires first you have it in your possession. Here the laws of heaven and the world agree. And here they separate. The world believes that to possess a thing it must be kept. Salvation teaches otherwise. To give is how to recognize you have received. It is the proof that what you have is yours. To understand that you are healed when you give healing, you accept forgiveness and as accomplished in yourself whenever you forgive. You recognize your brother as yourself, and thus do you perceive that you are whole. There is no miracle you cannot give, for all miracles are given to you. Receive them now by opening the storehouse of your mind where they are laid and giving them away. Christ's vision is a miracle. It comes from far beyond itself, for it reflects eternal love and the rebirth of love which never dies. But it has been kept obscure. Christ's vision pictures heaven, for it sees a world so like to heaven that what God created perfect can be mirrored there. The darkened glass the world presents can show but twisted images and broken parts. The real world pictures heaven's innocence. Christ's vision is the miracle in which all miracles are born. It is their source remaining within each miracle you give and yet remaining yours. It is the bond by which the giver and the receiver are united in extension here on earth as they are in heaven. Christ beholds no sin in anyone, and in his sight the sinless are as one. Their holiness has given by the Creator itself. Christ's vision is the bridge between the worlds. And in the power of Christ's vision, can you safely trust to carry you from this world into one made by holy forgiveness? Things which seem quite solid here are merely shadows there, transparent, faintly seen, at times forgotten, and never able to obscure the light that shines beyond them. Holiness has been restored to vision, and the blind can see. This is the Holy Spirit's single gift, the treasure house to which you can appeal with perfect certainty for all the things that can contribute to your happiness. All are laid here already. All can be received, but for the asking. Here the door is never locked, and no one is denied his least request or his most urgent need. There is no sickness not already healed, no lack unsatisfied, no need unmet within this golden treasury of the Christ mind. Here does the world remember what was lost when it was made, for here it is repaired, made new again, but in a different light. What was to be the home of sin becomes the center of redemption and the hearth of mercy, where the suffering are healed and welcome. No one will be turned away from this new home where his salvation awaits. No one is stranger to him. No one asks for anything of him except the gift of his acceptance, of his welcoming. Christ's vision is the holy ground in which the lilies of forgiveness set their roots. This is their home. They can be brought here back to the world, but they can never grow in its unnourishing and shallow soil. They need the light and warmth of kindly care that Christ's charity provides. They need the love with which he looks on them, and they become his messengers who give as they received. So, take from his storehouse that its treasures may increase. His lilies do not leave their home when they are carried back into the world. Their roots remain. They do not leave their source, but carry its beneficence with them and turn the world into a garden like the one they came from, and to which they go again with added fragrance. Now are they twice blessed. The messages they brought from Christ have been delivered and returned to them, and they return to them gladly unto him. Behold the store of miracles set out for you to give, because you are worth the gift when God appointed it to be given to you. Judge not the Creator's Son, but follow in the way Creator has established. Christ has dreamed the dream of a forgiven world. It is his gift whereby a sweet transition can be made from death to life, from hopelessness to hope. Let us an instant dream with him. This dream awakens us to truth. His vision gives the means for a return to our unlost and everlasting sanctity in the Creator. I give the miracles I have received. I can give every miracle, for I have received every miracle. And the Course in Miracles experiment from Pam Grout, her lesson 159, reads, "Let the universe haggle with the details." A Course in Miracles is quoted here as saying, "The instant it is welcome, it is there." Pam writes, "In lesson 159, I give the miracles I have received. This assures me I have received a house of riches, an unlimited trove of gifts, ready to contribute to my happiness. It says there's no limit to the miracles I can distribute. No sickness unhealed, no lack unsatisfied, no need unmet. My ego, true to form, takes exception to this. It constantly rides my ass, warns me to be careful, to hoard, to save my treasure. It advises me to make sure I have plenty first, and only then can I afford to give away, but not too much. This lesson urges the exact opposite approach. It goes so far as to say, the only way to claim my gifts is by giving them away. That's how I recognize I have them. That's how I find proof. The gift economy, a philosophy more than a financial practice, is to refuse to believe in scarcity and fear. Instead of always trying to, quote, get more, close quotes, a gift economy is for those looking for ways to give. It's so radical, most people can't even understand it. I pitched a story about the gift economy to my editor at People Magazine. She loves heroes, good news, and heartwarming human interest stories. But even though I gave her three specific examples of people working solely in the gift economy, she couldn't understand it. But how does it work? She kept repeating. It works, although I could never explain this spiritual belief to her, because once you give up your incessant fear and belief that it's a dog-eat-dog, every-man-for-himself world, as soon as you give that up, abundance cannot help but show up in your life. This lesson proves it is the reality of the human condition. So, of course, the miracles work for us 159. I give the miracles I have received, and I can give all miracles because they have all been given to me. So, our call number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and we'll have a conversation. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? What would be a useful way to spend this hour, the first of 2 hours that we have here today? I assume that Michael and Jeannie will be on for that. Ellen, are you calling to tell me the sound is staticky?
Yes. Well, I was calling to find out if it was just me or if everyone was hearing it. I mean, you were fine until right at the very end of what you read. It turned
static.
All right.
Well, if everyone will hold in place, I will hang up and call in and see if I have a better line.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So how's this?
Much better.
All right, we'll see if it holds.
Okay.
So thank you for that. Did you have another thought
well,
to share today, or was it just calling about the static?
I mean, I had some other thoughts that I will share if no one else needs your help. But, you know, if anyone needs your help, that's more important than me sharing these thoughts. So, but if no one has a hand raised, or if there isn't anything else that in particular that you wanted to say, I can share some thoughts.
Okay, well, we'll give it a minute. We'll say, speak now or forever hold your peace. If anybody else wants to raise a hand, go ahead. Otherwise, going once, going twice, sold. Go ahead, Ellen. What's on your mind?
Well, I would like to share the experience I had this morning because it really kind of showed me a couple of the principles in today's lesson. And, you know, we've been talking, like yesterday you mentioned the song Holy Now, and today's lesson talks about being in heaven. And, you know, that's pretty much what I experienced on my walk this morning. And I saw something that I had never seen before, even though it must happen every year, and I've been walking in that park for over 30 years. But this just goes to show you how, you know, like,
selective
so much...
our attention is.
Yes, exactly. And so what I noticed was that I noticed these white things, like there's a stream, a beautiful, pretty wide stream that runs through this park. And I was walking along the side of it, and all of a sudden I started seeing these white things floating on the water. And I thought, well, what is that? Because there were quite a few of them. And then all of a sudden I realized what they were, because the my favorite tree in the whole park is this huge northern catalpa tree. And the last time I had walked down there just a few days ago, I noticed that the tree was in full bloom. And every time I go to this park, I stand in front of that tree, whether it's blooming or in the middle of winter. There's something about that tree that is just so gorgeous to me. So I realized that, and I don't know if you've ever seen it bloom, but it has these huge clusters, big white, like bell-shaped flowers. And so there are these white bells floating down the stream, and they look like little sailboats to me, just because of the white. And I was about a quarter mile downstream from the tree when I first started seeing them. I was like, wow, look at that. I never saw that before. And as I walked, because I was walking towards the tree, they became more and more numerous until, like, the entire stream was just dotted with these beautiful white bells. It was like a very magical sight to me. And I thought, I can't believe I never saw this before. Obviously, that tree blooms every year. So I finally made my way down to the tree, and I climbed down this embankment right to the edge of the stream so that I could – the tree, like, grows right on the other side of the stream, but I just wanted to get as close to it as I could, and then I looked up at it. It's just magnificent. Just because I thought of seeing all those bells, all those blossoms floating down the stream, I thought the tree is going to look like half bare now, like it's lost half of its blossoms. No. I could swear it looked like it was in full bloom, every blossom intact. And there's one of the principles right there. It's like everything we give away, we actually keep. And it was like that because I thought for sure this tree was, because I thought, oh, it just started blooming a few days ago. Is it really going to, like, be half bare by now? No. It was still full of, it looked like all of its blossoms. And I looked up at this tree. It was so magnificent. And as I stood there, you know, one by one, these little blossoms were falling off and starting their journey down the stream. And I realized that, wow, this is actually like the tree letting go of these blossoms is actually giving it the ability to see what it normally can't ever see rooted in its position through the little blossoms floating down the stream, seeing whole areas of the park that it normally wouldn't see. And I just saw that as like the extension of love, you know? It's just the tree extending its love, and everyone and everything that gets to see these blossoms that normally they would never see, right? You know, other parts of nature that are rooted in place come floating down the stream. And it's just, I just saw this like extension of love. It was really beautiful, really, really beautiful. And, saw a lot of wonderful wildlife, and then I would get to this one part in the park where I had an extraordinary experience, and it always reminds me not to decide in advance, like, which way I'm going to turn when I get to a certain point. And because the experience that I had was, you know, I was in the process of trying to decide which way to go, and then I just got the message, you don't need to decide in advance. And when I got to the point of decision, you know, where I had to make a choice, I didn't, because I got a really big shove. It was so clear to me, I'm going that way. You know what I mean? So now whenever and it became very clear that how my mind hijacks these decisions, like it made them, and it didn't make the decision. But it's, you know, it's like the mind likes to claim everything as its own. And so whenever I get to that spot in the park, I always think, wow, I wonder which way this body's going to go today, you know, because I know whichever way it's, and now I don't have to get the shove. I just feel like a gentle nudging, like this is the way. And I go, okay, this way today. And I always know, like, it's that way because there's something special I'm going to experience by going that way. And sure enough, right after I went that way, within, you know, a minute, I saw the second, there's really only two catalpa trees in this park, and this second one is right there. It's a smaller one, but I never took the path. There's a path that leads down to it, and I went down the path, and I was able to stand directly under the tree in full bloom with all the little bells all on the ground underneath of it, and once again, it was just the magnificent beauty of this tree. And then the next thing I knew, I was hearing this dog splashing in the water a little bit upstream, and I looked to see what was going on, and there's this buck just standing still right in the middle of the stream, so majestically. And it was such a beautiful sight. So I went back up the path to get a closer look at him, and the guy with the dog, he had his dog in the water. The dog was trying to get to the buck, so he pulled the dog out. And so I went over there, and the buck just started walking towards me, walking right towards me to the edge of the stream. And I just thought, this is so beautiful. And then he stopped, and he decided to start eating some foliage that was on the edge of the stream there. And I just watched him for the longest time. But it was just, you know, I felt like this is it. Everything's holy now. You know, this is the way it feels like to be in heaven. And, you know, and I know.
Well,
it's...
think about this. I just finished a session with somebody who's on the other end of the spectrum. And you're thinking, you know, you're doing the Course in Miracles lessons, and you're thinking, I'm going to let myself be nudged, and I know that when the nudge comes, I'm going to see something lovely and unexpected. And so that's your thought pattern. I just finished a session with a person who's on the other end of the spectrum. He has downloaded a belief through his life, childhood, and young adult, you know, full adult life experiences, that whenever he has fun, pain is soon to follow. Whenever he lets himself have fun, there's going to be pain and suffering that comes along. And this is the template that's in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how he had yet another example. He's trying to force himself to let himself have fun these days. But he knows that when he does, he's going to have pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so his friend said, hey, let's go do this fun thing this weekend. Let's travel to this place and go to this, you know, outdoor thing, this beach is going to be lovely. And he immediately thought, it's not going to be good. There's going to be a big price to pay for this. But he's doing work in therapy. He's trying to take a different approach. But he's still operating from that template, that his life experiences have been such that he has had the event, the experience of pleasure followed by pain, the experience of having fun followed by pain, closely followed by pain, enough times, close enough together, that he has formulated a cause and effect relationship in his mind. It doesn't exist anywhere but in his mind. But in his mind, it's not like he's never had any pleasure or fun without pain, but enough times the pain and suffering has come right after that allowance of or thinking I'm going to go have fun, that now it's a cause and effect relationship in his mind. So sure enough, as that loads in his mind, he gets tight, he gets tense, he is in a battle before he even leaves the house. And then he chooses how to proceed from that embattled emotional state. And what we know is if we have negative emotions active in our minds and we make choices based on that, it's a distortion. We aren't seeing things clearly. We don't make good choices, et cetera. So he chooses to go in a vehicle which is the wrong vehicle to go in. On a hot day, over the roads he has to go, through the busy weekend traffic, and he's miserable because of the vehicle he's in. So he begins in pain.
Right.
And then he gets there and he's dreading the ride home over the same busy hot roads and the big trucks and in the vehicle he has to go in. But then he goes and he gets in and he has some time and he has some fun and now it's time to go home. And the vehicle that he took is damaged. Someone has taken pleasure in damaging his vehicle. And then he has to go on the hot, busy, high traffic, miserable trip home. And he's convinced himself that there it is. There's another piece of evidence. So he's seeing what he knew he would see, which is basically the very same principle that you say. You get to this place, you ask, you follow the nudge, and you know you're going to see something beautiful. And then what you do? You have a beautiful experience. You see something beautiful. So it works whether we choose the positive or the negative.
Right.
You know, it's there's absolute evidence available to us if we train ourselves to observe it, that we are actively creating our experience of life. Now, he didn't create somebody to do damage to his vehicle, right? But he did create his emotional response to it. He did create the mental emotional game of trying to turn that into proof that it only happened because he went out to have fun and that he has to pay for his fun by suffering. So it works both ways, you know. Mike Dooley likes to say in his emails when he sends out from the Totally Unique Thoughts, or it used to be Totally Unique T-shirts, but they changed the company name. He signs his emails with, "Thoughts become things, so choose the good ones."
I mean, a thought form. Every thought creates a form. So there you go. Yeah, and it really is through doing things like A Course in Miracles that my mind, you know, and I've just been focusing so much on having an open mind. And I think my mind has, in general, been more open than maybe the average person my whole life. I've been given kind of proof of that throughout my life. But I've been really focusing lately on opening my mind to everything, to every possibility, to the truth of the way things really are, and not resisting or closing off to anything that might appear. And, you know, it's definitely paying dividends.
Well, it is a very powerful process of creation that we've been given some dominion over, right? And that is our mind energy, as Michael Rice likes to say. In the ancient Aramaic, they didn't say, you know, in the beginning was the Word and the Word was made flesh. They said, really, something more like in the beginning was the mind energy. And the mind energy is a creative force. And the mind energy became the flesh, became the solid. And so we've been given dominion, each of us, over our little pose, our little packet of, our little focusing ability for the mind energy that we don't create, but we do get to direct it because it's always on. It's coming through our, what we experience as our mind, our awareness, our self, and it's always on. It's always going to create more of whatever we point it towards. So if we point it towards the negative, the bitter, the hurtful, the resentful, we're going to get more of that. If we focus it more on the positives or the miraculous, we're going to see and experience more of that.
Right. Yeah, and it was so funny because my mind was trying to tell me this morning it's a really, really hot and humid day here today. My mind was trying to tell me, oh, you don't want to go out there today. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to fall for that. I mean, I don't have to be uncomfortable. Even if it's hot and humid, I can be perfectly comfortable. And I felt the desire to be there, to be in that place, that beautiful place of, you know, it's a gorgeous park. And like, nope, that's where I'm going. I'm going out. And so I didn't listen to what my mind was trying to convince me of. And it was glorious.
As some part of you knew it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, the part that was nudging me to go.
Yeah. And the part that's learned over time that when you go with the nudges, you're going to experience wonderful, exciting, beautiful things.
Right.
So keep giving away those miracles.
Yeah.
And keep, you know, as we do, and this is today's lesson, then we experience what we have been given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was like I had such an like this immense grin plastered on my face almost the entire walk because I was just in that space. And everyone that I met, of course, like, smiled back at me. And it's just that right there is such a gift of seeing, like, faces transformed, you know. Suddenly, you know, you just, wow, the whole face lights up with the smile. And I was able to share some of the experiences I was having with people. And it was... Everyone was beautiful to me, you know. I didn't experience anyone that was not beautiful. I used to hate when I would see other people in the park. I always wanted it all to myself.
Okay.
And now all right. It's like, wow. So now I get to share this.
And now they are part of the beauty that you're experiencing.
Right, they add to it. Those beautiful smiles and, you know, sharing in the awe of nature. And I do notice, though, that a lot of people are totally oblivious to some of the things that I see. I'll be, like, standing there, like, in awe, and, like, people are just going by me, and I'm like, is no one else seeing this?
Yeah, well, and some people are in the middle of trying to get their exercise and get
yes.
a certain number of steps in before the time elapses. And yeah, and some people are there to look at something else. They're there to look at birds or they're to look at plants, and they're not. And the issue is, can I be okay with that? Or am I going to judge them because they're not looking at appreciating the same part of creation that I am? And that's where my learning comes in, right? How am I going into contraction and judgment? How quickly can I catch myself more and more, hopefully, over time, more and more quickly, catching myself as I go into judgment and releasing it, breathing and softening and releasing it, recognizing what the trick or what the torture is that my mind is engaging in every time it judges. Right, wrong, good, bad, up, down, hot, cold, etc. And in the moment that I'm judging, I take myself out of the direct experience. And now I'm relating to a memory, I'm relating to energies from the past, and I am not in the present moment.
So true. The big one for me is, you know, people on their phones or people, you know, listening to music, and it's like, oh, why wouldn't they want to listen to the birds, you know, like
right.
That sort of thing.
And then you're busy judging them. And
yeah.
In the moment when you're judging them, you're not enjoying the birds.
Exactly.
Or anything else about nature. And then
exactly.
And that's our whole point is, and then we miss that our judgment and the tension that we feel when we judge is there as an alarm system that's available anytime we wake up to it, that's there to tune us into the fact that we are the ones missing out.
Yeah.
Guy Finley likes to say, you know, we're raised in a culture that teaches us that when we're angry, it means somebody else is wrong, that we know what's right and the world is wrong. And the more angry we get, the more convinced we are that we're right and the world is wrong. And he says, the fact of the matter is, my anger doesn't prove I'm right. My anger only always and forever proves I don't even know what rightness is in that moment when I've gotten angry and when I'm judging.
Mm-hmm.
So the best use of my anger is as the alarm system to let me know I'm the one who's in error. It's my thoughts that are off the mark. It's my living in the past, to quote Jethro Tull, that is creating the suffering I'm experiencing. And maybe you wouldn't call it suffering. You call it tension. Maybe you don't call it tension. You just call it knowing or judgment. But that's what's causing it, is my living in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, the present moment is where it's at.
And in the present moment, is there judgment?
No. Not if you're truly present.
Yeah,
you have
because
to go into
judgment has to be bringing something from the past into the present moment to do a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Judgment has to have something to compare to in order to say this should or that shouldn't, etc.
Yeah, and you have to go into the mind. And I always think, you know, I say, or I've found myself saying to people, thinking always takes me away from myself. Feeling always brings me home. And so I try and remember that when I find myself thinking, whoops, I'm away from myself. I'm away from the present moment because that's where I am. I'm always in the present, my real self.
Well, there's some part of you that's always there.
Yeah.
And there's another part of you that's going to create an experience of not being there.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine as long as I don't buy into it and think that it's real and get lost in it.
Well, getting lost in it is fine too. It's just that it creates a very different experience and usually creates the kinds of experiences that we say we don't want to have. And there's the trap, because we're the ones that have created it with our thought, and then we say we don't want it, and then we try and think our way out of, you know, it or into something else. And that's one of the ways to define the sustained incoherence that is in the worksheet process. That's a term coined by David Bohm, the physicist.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
So there's a great definition of it. I'm going to just observe that that's what happens, rather than say this is bad or wrong, I'm just going to say, oh, right now I'm having pain or frustration or fear or judgment. But let me just take a look at how I'm misusing my conscious logical mind and the tool of thought to create this upset.
Yeah, I remember when, just reminded me of when my niece was young, about everything she would say the same thing. How interesting. Nothing was good, nothing was bad. Everything was just interesting. And I thought, wow, look at her. She gets it.
Yep, at a certain level, we all get it at one point or another. We don't stick with it, but we get it.
Right.
You know, it's you'll part of just being being alive in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you were saying.
I said, yeah, I'll have to remind her of that. I don't know that she would remember that she used to say that all the time.
Well, any other thoughts or comments for you?
No, that was it.
Okay, well, keep constructing positively and keep giving away those miracles and rejoicing in what you're getting.
Now, that's my intention.
All right. Blessings.
Thank you for letting me share. Blessings.
So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we have 17 minutes or 16 minutes left to have a conversation before we do a sign-off and hand it over to the second hour, Michael and Jeannie. How can we support you today? What would be useful for you to talk about? We have a support group tonight that's available absolutely free for anybody that's interested from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. The information about how to join us is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And we would appreciate it if you would, if you care to join us, join us. And if that's not your cup of tea or you're busy during that hour, if you would pass that information along to anybody that might benefit from it. Again, it's at mindshiftersacademy.org website, a separate information page for Tuesday and Thursday. As always, we put out the request for people that you think we might benefit from interviewing, either for the Journey's Dream podcast called On Your Mind or for this podcast that we're doing, the Mind Shifters Radio. Today's interview that got released for the Journey's Dream On Your Mind podcast is with an integrative psychiatrist, a very young, very bright psychiatrist out of Florida. His name is Dr. Andrew Pleaner, and that's available for a free listen at journeysdream.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. Dr. Pleaner is a very passionate about his work with sameheareglobal.org and almost identical mission to the Journey's Dream team, which is the intention to make talking about mental health and solutions, effective, efficient solutions for mental health available on a much broader basis, to do everything possible to remove the stigma around talking about mental health and to make it easier and easier for people to find holistic, integrative, functional medicine approaches to dealing with mild to moderate to severe mental health issues. Resources are available at journeysdream.org. and more are available at sameheareglobal.org. Now, coincidentally, it turns out that four or five of the people who are now in the support network or the resource network for Same Here Global have been interviewed by me for this Journey's Dream podcast. So all kinds of good resources, and they're available on both websites, journeysdream.org and sameheareglobal.org. And we're still shopping around for, if you have read a book, listened to a podcast that was deeply moving or inspirational, if you have a favorite teacher that you think it would be beneficial for us to either bring onto the Mind Shifters radio show or the On Your Mind podcast or Journey's Dream, you can call me now, 563-999-3581, and press 1 and mention it, or you can send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And I am grateful to everyone who has mentioned something like that. We've had people like Corinne Zupko and Laura McGowan and just a host of people, Jody Skillicorn and Dr. Nishi Bhopal. All of these people have come to me because somebody said, hey, check this person out. And it's far easier for me to track down leads that other people recommend than try to come up with all of them on my own. I do my own work. I do my own searching for different titles on the internet when I have spare time. I do my own exploration of reading books and listening to podcasts here and there, and then reaching out to those people that I think might be beneficial. And you can help us amplify and multiply those efforts by forwarding to me any thoughts about spiritual teachers, podcasts, psychologists that are doing advanced integrative functional medicine approaches, and I will do my best to enlist their help in these projects. I had somebody in this morning who was deeply, deeply struggling with the idea that outside events were causing his upset, and really, really struggling to grasp the actuality that it was his choice of interpretation of those events that was really causing his upset. Susan Bingham, welcome. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Hi, I'm not Michael, you're Dr. Tim. I wanted to
yes,
ask
you. Yes, I am.
About,
thank you for verifying that. I woke up kind of confused about that this morning.
The Walzac interview, did you do it and is it up? I've been looking for it.
Well, it was scheduled to be released today, but they had some technical glitches, and so it will be scheduled a week from today for release.
Oh, okay.
It has been recorded, it has been uploaded, but it won't be officially released until a week from today.
Oh, okay, good. I'll be on the lookout. Is that Journey's Dream also?
Yeah, that's through the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream.
Okay, that's great. Well, this was a good discussion with you and Ellen, and about your client, you balanced Ellen's light, bright, open self to this man who has a Mr. Crabapple, everything's not going to go well mind frame. And I
and
was
he's
thinking
experiencing
about how
the same dynamic, right? There's
mm-hmm,
the key.
Yeah.
Same dynamic. It works in all of us.
Right.
We choose crabapple view, we get crabapples.
No, that's true. Well, I realize that I fall somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, And I know what Ellen means about going for a walk. There's something about going for a walk and meeting up with or just running into other people who are doing their morning walk. I do a long morning walk and a long night walk with my grand dog. And many of us now know each other. And so there's a little club down there in this huge park. But there are also some very interesting interchanges. For instance, and Ellen will laugh if she's listening, there's been a man who at the beginning of the pandemic started walking with his wife, and this man was massively overweight. Just you could tell that every step he took, it was a struggle. And I thought, oh my God, how great that he's down here doing this, and how wonderful. I wonder if that's his wife. And I introduced myself at one point, and then he got thinner enough that I guess his wife trusted the situation and stopped coming, and he comes alone. And I've watched the transformation of this man from uncomfortably big to, he's still big, but he's lost about 150 pounds, and he had bypass surgery, gastric bypass, and he was very open about it. We learned each other's names. He's very dark-skinned, but he's a white man. Well, the other day, I saw a man built like him who was a black man, but not very black, so I just thought, well, that's got to be Rob, and I held out my arms and yelled, "You look fantastic!" And this was a perfect stranger. And he opened his arms and said, "Thank you so much." He met me right there in my nuthood. And so he said, "I really appreciate it. You don't look so bad yourself." And I thought, well, that came out better than it should have. I mean, but anyway, yeah, there's something really gorgeous about walking in nature and meeting people who are out for their constitutionals, and some of them are puffing along, looking at the ground with their earbuds in, arms flying, and they're moving as fast as they can. You know they're on a mission, but there are other ones who are just, you know, they're doing what Ellen's doing, I think. They're just loving it. And so that is a great way. If you're going to start, I suppose, if you're going to start changing your worldview, you could start with something like that, which is just so positive to start with anyway. The beauty of nature, the birds are all over the place. The dog runs and snaps at butterflies, and God forbid, every once in a while, my grand dog catches a butterfly and she rolls in things, and it's very festive. So, but as I said, I'm partway in the middle of the spectrum. I have a huge inner snark, and I was going to ask you about the snark. And I have...
Okay, let's hear about it.
Okay.
What is the huge inner snark?
I think I keep the snark because I think the snark is keeping me honest. And if I don't have snark activity, then I just might be a Pollyanna. And I have a problem with Pollyannas. And my friend that I no longer see used to call me a Pollyanna. And I got it. I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm coming across as a Pollyanna. I have to reinstate my snark. So I don't know what I'm asking you here, except that is it possible? I guess I'm asking this. Is it possible to have a functional snark and still be really positive and loving and stuff? My snark and I haven't integrated.
What do you mean by the snark?
Suspicious, maybe. Taking things with a grain of salt, not trusting. I'll give you an example. Big example of snark showing up. There's this couple who are parents at a school my grandson used to go to, and when we would go to parent-teacher meetings or to gatherings, the wife would sit on the husband's lap, And they would be cooing and billing each other during the meeting. And my snark would come out. I'd say, what the hell? Not that I think they shouldn't do that, but I wondered what they were doing. And one reason I wondered what they were doing is because I think I know what they were doing, but I'm not sure, is that my son knows these people and says they fight a lot at home. They really aren't getting along very well. And I thought maybe they're doing that to convince themselves and everybody else that they're getting along great and they're like lovers. And so here's my snark twiddling her inner thumbs and watching them and becoming distracted and becoming really not a very nice person because I'm having bad thoughts about that person. So it's a suspicious
I
guess.
So your question is, can you have that going at the same time as what?
My inner Ellen Appel, my inner friend Ellen. Can I be like
Ellen?
Can you have
them both at the same time?
Not
quite,
I guess.
Can you have them both and celebrate life?
Maybe, Dr. Tim. Maybe.
Well, no, because in the moment when you're snarking like that, you're not celebrating life. And you're not seeing, as this today's lesson would show us, that we are all the same. And everything I give, all the miracles that are around that I give away to prove that I've received them, I'm giving them to myself because I'm not separate from my brother or sister. So I can't be in this awareness of my true nature as love and the true nature of love as everyone around me and be in love, be
mm-hmm.
snarking
yeah.
and judging. So I can flip back and forth between the two. We're very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
and
that's the best that I've
and
been able to
and the essence of the presence of the snark, as you call it, doesn't change my true nature. So it's okay. All it changes is my experience of life. It pulls me out of the experience of life and the moment.
Okay, well, this melds right into another question, which is related. You once said, or somebody said, we're getting guidance all the time. Maybe that was Walczak. I forget who. Somebody recently. Do you remember that? We're getting guidance all the time. When people say, I got guidance to do this or that, we are actually getting guidance all the time. But I've always thought of guidance as something positive, divinely ordained, setting us in the right direction. And I don't think that's what the person who said that means. I think that person means you can be guided to do egotistical, self-centered, bad, mean things as well. I guess that's sort of a question. What is guidance? Okay,
I don't know. And we're at the end of our hour, so it's a great question for Michael and Jeannie. I don't quite know what you mean by guidance or what this person meant, but it's a great thing to explore. I think that the short answer from my perspective is when I'm talking about guidance, I'm talking about getting connected to your higher self and knowing what's going to be best to serve you and everyone around you in the best possible way, how to be a blessing to yourself and others in each moment. That's what I would talk about as guidance. But you can, chew that over a little bit with Michael and Jeannie in the next hour. And I'll remind us all, thank you so much, Susan, for your call, and Ellen, for your call earlier. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. It's a good question to start off with.
Yeah, have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, June the 8th, 2021, and their calling number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, and then Susan, I'll turn your microphone back on, and we'll start the show out with your question, and that would be awesome. And he's dialing in right now. So, okay, give him just a moment. I'm going to go ahead and turn your microphone on. He should be getting in any second now. And in my opinion, you know, our carbon-based memory, our ego, could be telling us, you know, or guiding us, you know, you need to do this or that. And it's kind of like, you know, the cartoon where you have an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other shoulder, and each one's telling you what to do. And just depends, I guess, on which guidance, if that's what you want to call it, that you listen to. But when I think of guidance, I also think of the higher power or whatever telling us what we need to do. And I think it's just a matter of whether we're actually listening to it or not. I know that, you know, there have been some times in my life when it's been absolutely so vivid that I was being guided. You know, there was two that I think of right off the bat is Michael and I, when we were on the road and we went somewhere, I can't remember where we were even, and we were doing these salt tanks where you get in it and you lay in this little fine mist of salt, you know, goes around. Well, I did my session first, and then when Michael did his, I was like, well, I'm going to go down to the corner store, you know, while you're doing your session, and then I'll be back. And it was kind of strange because afterwards Michael said that about the time I would have reached the corner, he had this thought that he should have said, you know, be real careful or something. But what happened when I got to the corner, I was standing there and there was just something that said step backward. And I was at the crosswalk. And when I stepped back, this huge truck just comes zooming through the red light. And, I mean, it was just like it kind of almost took my breath because it was like, oh, wow, how close that was. Because if I had stepped off the curb, it would have hit me. And then there was another time that I was taking people back to the airport from Heartland after an intensive. And I was driving down the interstate, and I was getting ready to pass an 18-wheeler. And, again, it was just like back off and get behind him. And just about the time I backed off his retread, you know, where they have their tires redone, big piece of rubber come flying off of that tire. And if I'd kept on going forward to pass him, it would have hit the side of the van and probably wrecked us. And so, I mean, those are two times that it was just so vivid that I was listening to a different voice other than my own. But, you
those
know,
are
I think
fabulous
that there are,
stories.
Yeah. But then there are other times that, you know, I've done something and I can convince myself that I was told to do that and the result was not favorable. And so I knew then that I was listening to the wrong voice. And so Michael's in with us now, and I don't know if you caught enough of the conversation. We're talking about what is guidance.
Okay, I have not had the conversation until what you were just saying, sweetie. So, and that was in Fort Lauderdale that happened. I remember that very vividly.
Yeah.
The salt tank. Yeah.
Yeah. So Susan had asked right at the end of Dr. Tim's show what guidance really was. You know, is it always good guidance or is it bad guidance or, you know, is it both? And I said it's kind of like having the cartoon where you have a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder and they're both telling you to do something and it's just a matter of which one you listen to. But when I think of guidance, I automatically think of a higher guidance. But I guess carbon-based memory can guide us to do something inappropriate as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, if there's hostility or fear, the dividing line for me would be, is love present in the guidance? If love is present, it's going to be on track. If there's some form of, you know, hostility, fear, you know, why don't you sock it to him kind of guidance? It's like, no, I think I'll pass on that one.
That's easy, Michael. But what about what about my, I had an aunt and uncle who were childless aunt and uncle that we kind of adopted. And they were, to my mind, obnoxiously pious. I'm sorry, that's my snark. I've been talking about my inner snark to Dr. Tim, and it's very active right now. But
okay.
This aunt and uncle were, you know, they were constantly spouting scripture. And my aunt said to me one day, oh, she did something for me, and I can't remember what it was. It was so, it was just the wrong thing, and I can't tell you what it was. But I said, what happened? How did you think to do that? And she said, well, I had guidance. And I'm sure she was doing it, or maybe I'm not so sure now that you mention it. She said it was her guidance, and I imagine that she was trying to be a very loving person. And so I got suspicious of the word guidance, and I began to write it off, you know, saying, I can't do it, and I don't trust anybody who says they do. Then the other day or something I read, Dr. Tim or somebody said, we are getting guidance all the time. And, of course, that's true in the most basic sense. Somebody said, hey, you know, it's time to go to the grocery store. That's just your planning. It's just your life and that sort of guidance. But what Jeannie was talking about, I've had a couple of those experiences, too, where it was just this visceral move aside right now. And it saved a couple of lives. And those don't come very often. So I was just asking Tim, Dr. Tim, about his take on what guidance was. But I like what you say about if it comes from love. And I think my aunt was coming from love. That doesn't mean you say it always hits the mark. I'm not so sure, Michael. But maybe you can argue with me about that. I'd like to hear what you say.
Well, my take would be, does it come from love, syrupy, I love you, or does it come from being? When I'm talking about comes from love, I don't mean the syrupy, you know, American definition of I love you, but rather is it coming from being? One of the things we do, and it's actually been a few years since we've done one, we do a 9-day intensive called Intuitive Development, and in that 9-day intensive, you're paired with a partner. You're with the same partner through the whole 9 days. And we do exercise after exercise after exercise after exercise to practice listening to guidance and then getting live feedback in the moment. Like you say, those kind of life-saving things don't happen that often. So really spend time with when one of those came through that you knew was accurate and what was your feeling, what was your sense of it. And that will help you know in the future. But in the 9-day, by the end of the 9-day intensive, I know when I'm getting accurate guidance and I know when it's off. I know what it feels like because I've practiced with it. And that's, you know, can be really helpful to have that practice. You know, I said, gee, I thought you were going to do blah, blah, blah. And they're like, how did you know? I haven't told anybody that. Oh, I know that. I was being guided with that. And then when I offer something and they're like, nah, that's not it at all, then, you know, just I get a sense of when I can really listen to my intuition and trust it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that higher faculty of intuition that comes from being, from the soul. So it's another channel of information coming in. You know, I hear things, I see things, I feel things. I taste things, and when it's accurate, when it's on track, I know. And when it's off, I can tell. But it does take some practice to do that.
Yeah.
That's why oftentimes you'll hear me say to somebody when they have, you know, an opening experience where something's really on for them, I suggest, okay, so really detail that in as much detail as you can. Every sensation, every aspect of yourself, really detail that. And then in the future, when you're off base, you can go back to, this is what it feels like when it's really on track, and I should be listening to it. So it's building the brain. You know, it's like everything else. It's building the brain cells. And the rule of the three Ps, you know, practice, practice, practice. And it's practice that develops discernment. And discernment tells me, is this accurate or is this just my mind making it up?
Yeah, and I bet sometimes we don't know, you know.
Discernment is definitely something that develops with practice.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was talking about to Dr. Kim is that as a result of this guidance thing, my inner snark was very active. Whenever I hear the word guidance, my inner critical
like
person comes
to me.
Out. Yeah. But I wanted to say person who appears, and this is in Call the Midwife, Nurse Crane. She seems mm-hmm. to be able to have a loving heart, tremendous goodness, but a kind of crusty snarkiness too.
Right.
Especially
she does.
At the beginning.
You identify with her?
I do. I do. But I admire her and I love her so much. I love the whole thing, including the snark. So there's something about keeping the snark. It's complicated, Michael. I don't know what to make of this, but
well, and your snark may be giving you guidance, so listen to it.
Okay. All right. That's a lovely idea.
You know, that may be the way it's going to come through your mind, but is there mm-hmm. love behind it? As you see with Nurse Crane, you know, she can tell when somebody's in trouble, she's there with love present. Otherwise,
yeah.
she can be, as you say, a little crusty, a little offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So is there yeah. love behind it? Is really the key. That's where the truth comes from.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I've been, since our workshop on Sunday, and then I shared yesterday the idea of being able to speak out of actuality rather than perceptual constructs. And what I'm realizing is that what the responsibility communication does is it moves us out of the construct about how you did it to me and blah, 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 the whole false thing, and drops us into language that takes us to actuality, which oftentimes, of course,
yes.
leads us to, you know, places where there's a lot of work to be done because we're now touching into actuality rather than playing out of the cover story that projects.
Mm. That's great. That's a good connection. I like that.
Yeah, it was a new one for me, and
mm-hmm.
very it's just fitting in. You know, it's kind of like I'm getting a new picture of the whole body of the work, and that piece just kind of
yeah.
clunk just locks right in, and
mm-hmm.
there it is. How did the session on Sunday impact you?
It was complicated. I had some work to do afterwards. Yeah. It was a good session, but I felt as if I could have done a piece of work right in there on that show, and I just wasn't willing to right then, and it didn't feel safe to me, and that's my projections. It isn't that you weren't safe. It seemed to... Yeah, somehow the radio show, since nobody can see me, it reminded me of a time when I was concertizing a lot and I had this wish that I could play my concert behind a screen so no one could see what I went through to produce the sound that I wanted. And it was sort of like that, feeling too exposed. I just didn't want to do it. So,
sure.
But... Magda's work and the clarifying and the clarifying and the clarifying, it was good. But my snark came out a few times, and I won't even, you know, it's my work to do, but certain, you know, I get triggered by some people's remarks, for instance. And, boy, it just showed me I have a lot of work to do, basically. So, yes, it was very fruitful, put it that way.
And from my side, you know, the re-presentation of the responsibility communication was a whole new way of thinking about it. And so for me, it kind of felt a little bit disjointed because it was such a different take on what, you know, I've been presenting on that topic for 25 years and what, you know, the process with Magda opened a whole different way for me to look at it, and I'm still working on learning to language that experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all right though. So it was disjointed. I mean, it was a working session.
Yes, it was a working session, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
And
you...
I was going to go back and refine the page. You know, originally the instructions are one page, and it's now three.
Yeah.
And I was going to go back and refine it, but I think I've been sort of, you know, tapping into it. I think I'm going to send it out the way I presented it on Sunday, and then just ask for feedback so I can move into clarification.
That's a good idea.
Text the next
and
level.
I was glad you hadn't tried to issue a new one before this session, because there was so much new stuff that came out during the session that it would change
right.
it again. So
yes, it's interesting to take something that has been pretty settled for 25 years, been teaching it that long, and then just have the whole thing turned upside down and restructured. It was a challenge for me.
It's interesting. I bet. And you had prepared, I mean, you started off teaching. You started off, you know, doing notes and teaching, and then it got away with all of us. I don't think that was a bad thing at all. I think it was a good thing. But I can see why you felt the rug had been pulled out from under, maybe, or something like that. But it was great, and I'm glad you let it go that way. You didn't try to, you know, rein it in or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Life process is interesting, powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my snark, I know you probably, do you want to just do your reading, Michael, and do your stuff? And
no, go ahead.
Whatever you want to do.
Share what you have to share. We'll pick that up.
Well, this is an example of a snark, and I think I know what's wrong in the snark picture. There's a couple, I was telling Dr. Tim on the radio show, there's a couple who, when they came to school meetings, parents one of the students, and I would attend the meetings sometimes in place of my John and April, my son and his wife, because they were working. This couple, the man and wife would sit, she would sit on his lap, and they would be kind of making out. I mean, in a very, you know, not terrible way, but they were pretty obviously presenting themselves as a very loving couple. But I also knew from my son that there was a lot of trouble between them, and they were having trouble at home. And so my snark comes out. Instead of saying, look at that couple, they're so scared that people might find out that they're not getting along, that they're putting on a show for us. Of course, I'm assuming even that. Maybe they weren't putting on a show. Maybe they really were sincere and they felt the way they felt. And you know, the whole... Anyway, my snark, my critical, I wasn't even present. I was so conscious of this couple. So I had a lot of homework to do on that one. That's what I mean about a snark.
Like they showed you every issue you've got around intimacy.
Yeah. Right. And that came up during the session. You know, I forget just how, but yeah. I won't go into it now, but yes, you're right, Michael. Ouch.
And you remember the last time the conversation came up about intimacy, that the suggestion was that maybe there's some work to do there, and you were more comfortable just forgetting about it. And what that said to me at the time, and I think I shared it, is kind of like, well, you can leave that energy in your body, or you could process through it. So might be an invitation once again to move back in that direction and clear out what inhibits and what hasn't been resolved.
I have been doing that, Michael. In fact, that was some of the stuff that came up in the session. Yeah. It's good. It's like grinding ground floor work that I don't really want to do, but I'm already having to do it.
Yeah. Well, and you come from a generation more so than, you know, the days, the way the generations are being brought up today, but you come from a generation that whole conversation is such a no-no and you just don't go there. But, you know, everybody goes there, but you have to be secretive about it. You have to hide it from yourself even, as opposed to just openly, willingly going there and cleaning up whatever's of a disintegrative nature.
Yeah, and there's some serious stuff in there. Yeah.
Mm. All right.
Time to go to work on it.
All right. Carry on.
All right, young lady, we appreciate you.
I appreciate you, too. And
all
I'd
right,
love to. Maybe I'll email. I had a couple of questions about your, you know, Jeannie's fundraiser on Facebook, but I don't know if this is the place to ask about that, how things are going, or we can email each other if that isn't.
Whatever you like, you know, Jeannie's here. Ask her.
Hey.
Okay. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi.
Yeah, you had a family fundraiser. And
right.
How did it go, and was it successful, and is everything okay? I began to worry a bit, you know.
I appreciate your donation. And there's actually, I had just put a limit. It asked you to put a limit on it. So I had just put one of 2,000, and I got 1,490. So I think that's good. I mean, that's $1,490 more than what I had. So it's and everything's okay. It's just, you know, there's expenses, and you know, we've got some income coming in, and of course, Dad buys a lot of the groceries. But you know, it's just, it makes it a little bit challenging not having a steady income, and there's bills to pay, and the app is ending up costing me more than I had anticipated just to have it redone. And
wow.
So just, you know, to help things out here, and so it's much appreciated. But I think it's very successful, seeing as, you know, I got that much. I mean, that's, I think it's awesome.
Well, good.
And thank you again for your part in it.
You're welcome. Yeah, whoa, okay. Well, it's good that we all who take advantage of this show and of, you know, I mean, two extra sessions at no extra cost and so forth, and all the work you're doing in between times, both of you, it is, it's a lopsided world. All I can say is some professions, I mean, get $500-$600 an hour, $1,000 an hour, depending on what profession, lawyers and doctors being at the top. And then we have at the other end generous folks like you who are working in the humanities, psychotherapy, psychology, human relations, and you have artists who often give away their work because they want it to be shown, and nobody wants to pay for it or can or whatever it is, so they live by being waiters or something at a restaurant so they can do their art. It's just a terribly lopsided culture we live in. But
yeah,
you've put yourselves on the lower end of the incoming because you give away so much. You just plain give away so much. So.
Well, my experience is you can't outgive God. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like the idea is to make it available and, you know, and let everybody support it as they choose to.
Well, that's wonderful.
And it did, you know, when we abruptly made the change from being on the road for, you know, 30 weeks and having Heartland open for a couple of months, it certainly abruptly changed things when, first of all, we stopped traveling, and then with COVID, Heartland shut down. So definitely
right,
put a dent in the cash flow.
I can imagine. Well, thanks for talking about it. I didn't know whether I should ask or not, but
we're transparent.
You're great.
Appreciate you.
You too.
All right, young lady. Well, any other thoughts for you?
No, and I'm gonna have to leave the show. So I'm gonna hang up, not only be muted, but hang up. So thank you so much for this time.
Okay. All right. Enjoy your day.
Thanks, you too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we do have Magda with her hand up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello to the young lady.
Hello, 828. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
You're loud and clear.
Great. Susan, don't leave yet. I hope
she's already gone.
Yeah, okay. So I wanted to check something. I had some thoughts come up when she asked about guidance, and I have my ideas of where that comes from, and I want to check out with you guys. So I agree that our true guidance comes from source, and that's when we're in a state of love and connected to that source. And if we're not getting our guidance that way, I'm thinking that the guidance really comes only from our thought disorders and the content of our carbon-based memory, and that we're being guided by old habits that we have formed based upon those thought disorders. What do you think?
That's right. That would be my take exactly. And that in projection communication, we're communicating about our perceptual constructs, which transparently integrate all of our thought disorders. When moving into responsibility communication, I'm dropping down below that, and I'm now starting to deal more with the actuality of the energy patterns that are driving me. And when I can bring one of those energy patterns that are driving me to the surface in the presence of love by giving it permission to come forward with my language, then bang, there it is. And it just automatically begins to dissolve when I can look at the truth, as much as the truth may be, painful to look at.
I agree with that. Speaking of thought disorders, I just have a new understanding of that concept, completely new. And it was because of the reality men are the communication.
Responsibility.
Yeah. Going through that process and getting feedback from you, it was the first time I really began to understand thought disorder and how it guides my behavior, my thoughts, and therefore my actions. And so I realized a couple of days after we had our session that what I was projecting and externalizing onto Chuck was based upon a thought disorder that when he acted a certain way, that meant, it was my assumption, that meant that he didn't value me, that I was not important enough, and all of that followed. And that was based upon the thought disorder that I had formed as a kid. So that took me back to my father and my interactions with him and observations of him with the rest of the family. And I suddenly realized, oh my goodness, I imagine he had his own thought disorders, and that his behavior that I was projecting was probably because there was something, he thought there was something wrong with me, or maybe there was something really wrong with me. That was possibly not it at all. It could have been that he was operating out of his own thought disorder, like I have to push myself out there and speak up, because otherwise people don't listen to me, the father, or I'm not good enough, or because my interpretation was, well, he thinks he's the only person who has something important to say, but maybe it wasn't that at all. Maybe it was because he felt like he was worthless And the only way he could try to justify himself was to come forth with, you know, bullying and so forth. I mean, it could have been any number of different thought disorders that he was, his behavior was formed by and had nothing to do with me at all. And wow, that makes a huge difference in my thinking about my relationship with him, because guess who I've always blamed for different aspects of my own thought disorders? It was him. He was the problem. And that's why that question I asked you yesterday about where did it come from, I think underneath that was, that got me started in understanding it doesn't matter, because then I'd have to know where this came from, and the father before him and the grandmother before him and all of that, and that,
right.
Who cares? You know?
Well,
so
you remember the power there is in the tools that you use to dialogue with your grandfather by writing to him and talking to him. You might do, rather than, you know, trying to figure it out in your head, you might do the same thing and have that conversation with him and see what dad comes back with. And by doing that, you may find that a whole lot of healing on both sides, opening the space for his healing and connecting with him in a true dialogue. What will move through you and process will be monumental, I suspect.
Yeah, good idea. Okay, yeah, I have a lot of potential work to do here on many different levels with mind shifters and forgiveness worksheets and that writing letters and opening up to him to write back to me would be really good. So, you know, this experience has been phenomenal, and it's continuing. Continuing to be so. Yeah.
Sweet.
Oh, and I
want,
do we have time? Oh, yeah.
Go
we
for
have time.
It.
I remember when we went through the first 14 weeks with that group.
Right.
And you had us make copies of something you sent out that had, I think it was two different letters that I think you call them responsibility communication. I'm not sure. I haven't looked back in the notes. And you asked us to read through them and prepare to give feedback the next week.
Right.
You asked us to look for denials. And, boy, that was powerful. So many of us, I didn't talk with a whole bunch of people, but I did talk with at least three or four folks, and everyone found that to be very, very powerful and helpful, because it's so much easier to see and hear someone else's denial than it is to hear our own initially until we retrain ourselves. And so I'm going to make the suggestion that it would be a very useful tool to develop a couple of stories, short scenarios, responsibility communication scenarios that had some problems that were like mine, where I was definitely making projections and assumptions and you know, do the same thing with that. Give the students the copy that they can make and then have people take a look at them individually and then come back and discuss it as a group. I think that would be a marvelous learning for all of us.
Good thought. I'll make sure to do that on the next level.
Hey, that'd be great. Great. Okay, well, I know that as time goes on, I'll probably have more to report, but that's my biggie for right now, realizing, my dad had his own thought disorders. That was just huge.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
And the other thing that insight will do is it will tend to bring forward compassion for him.
Yeah.
And compassion for him will open a whole other piece of your mind.
Yes. Yeah, that was the immediate experience that I had when I realized that. It's like, oh my gosh, I've been accusing him all of this time of being the problem, the creator of my problems. And so I felt an immense amount of compassion when I realized that he had his own problems. He had his own distortions of his thinking. And, compassion. Very good that you picked up on that, Michael. Yeah.
And it might be useful to really dig back into that and look at the goals that you had for him. Look at all those accusations and the goals you had for him that resulted in those accusations, and start working on doing worksheets on canceling those goals.
You know, over the years I've done some of that, but I believe that doing, even working with the same goals right now, would be quite different. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you know, look at the goal for him to have, you know, realizing that he was imperfect, as we all are, looking at and canceling the goal for him to be perfect, for him to provide you with what you thought he should have, and realize that his deficiencies didn't leave room for that, for him to come forward through that. And as you process that, you'll find that those deficiencies in you will tend to disappear and empower you on the next level to open up through your imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
what?
That to
my
me is what, say it again.
What do you mean my imperfections? You must be kidding.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Well, I know there are only one or two little tiny ones, but.
Well, one of the goals I had for him that I remember was done before, and it's simulating a laugh right now, is that he was supposed to be, he was the dad who was supposed to be Ozzie and Harriet. He was supposed to be Ozzie. My dad was supposed to be like Ozzie. And,
right.
So, yeah, I had those ideals that I was holding him up to that, were definitely not even possible for him with given his situation in that time and space. So,
hey, you know, we tend to come up with this idealization of parents of, well, but they're perfect and all-knowing and all-powerful, and the fact is they're just as flawed as anybody else because they is us and we are them. And, you know, when we're parents, we're flawed. And, you know, but the impression that's given is this, you know, all-powerful, all-knowing. And it's just a cover. It's just a fraud.
Mm-hmm. It truly is. And it helps us to inculcate the ambition to be all-knowing and all-powerful and all-perfect because we thought they were. So it's a double-edged sword there. Wow. Okay. Well, I know what I have to do. thank you. Thank you, guys.
Well, you know, yesterday I mentioned the line from the Course in Miracles that says that perception is a skill made up by each of us to take the place of what the Creator created in creation. And using the responsibility communication takes us down into what the Creator created, to the actuality of life, rather than the hallucinations of a world that we've made up to sit on top of it. And you know, the passages, you've heard me share this before, but there are two particular paragraphs in the Course that for me, and I'm starting to see a little more now about why I went into process when I read these two paragraphs. And you know, all the years and all the reading I've done of the course, these are the only two paragraphs that have ever done this. And for the longest time, and I don't even remember exactly how long a time, every time I read these two paragraphs, my mind would literally go into an altered state. I would go into process. And I'm realizing now that it has to do with, you know, there's a whole language supports and generates this fanciful world that only exists in hallucination in our minds. So the Course says it like this. It would indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols of the world, that is, words, forgetting them forever, yet were asked to take a teaching function. You have need to use the symbols of the world a while, but be you not deceived by them as well. They do not stand for anything at all. So the projection communication, it's nothing. It's built on a total, complete fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so what the Course is saying is, we're going to ask you to drop all of that, but then it goes on and says, so be you not deceived by them as well, do not stand for anything, and in your practicing it is this thought that will release you from them. They become but means by which you can communicate in ways the world can understand, by which you recognize is not the unity where true communication can be found. Thus, what you need each day are intervals in which the learning of the world becomes a transitory phase, a prison house from which you go into the sunlight and forget the darkness. And think about, you know, as you made that shift into responsibility communication, you left that world of darkness and you touched into what the actuality was, and that's where the actuality, the actual energy going on, resolves when we can bring it forward truly. And so the Course goes on to say, here you understand the word, the name which the Creator has given you, the one identity which all things share, and one acknowledgement of what is true. And then you step back to darkness, not because you think it's real, but only to proclaim its unreality in terms which still have meaning in the world that darkness rules. So most of our language is of the world of darkness, of this hallucinated world of perception that we made up to take the place of what the Creator actually handed us, which is everything we need. And it makes the space when we can shift to that language and stop using the language that supports the hallucinations, that the actuality emerges. And if the actuality was traumatic and painful, in telling the truth about it, process the painful. Mm-hmm. And move through it and let go of the trauma, that otherwise I speak in a way that tries to keep the trauma under the surface so I never have to look at it.
Absolutely true. Yeah. Wow. So that's pretty interesting idea of realizing that these words are not the truth. And after we get to that place, than to incorporate them, to be able to talk to others and help others understand. They become a tool rather than a distortion for our own mind.
Exactly. Exactly.
Neat.
To proclaim its unreality in terms that still have meaning in the world that darkness rules, but don't be fooled by it. And basically, if you listen to the show, you know, what happens in virtually every conversation we have with anybody that we're talking with, what are we doing? Somebody's got a story. We then proclaim the unreality of that story and step into, so what's underneath it? What's the truth about it? And when I can surface the underlying hidden part that my whole perceptual mind wants to keep out of view, then I can process through it. Otherwise, I just keep shifting around the story in the world of darkness. And, you know, sadly, most people live their whole lives in the world of darkness, the world of projected perception. And to move out of that is to wake up, proclaim the unreality of the words from the world of darkness. Are you breathing? Are you with us, Magda? Did we lose Magda, Jeannie?
Here I am.
Oh, there you are.
Here I am. Yeah, I had muted so that I wouldn't be interrupting you when you were talking.
Oh.
So it seems to me, and I'm feeling rather that my words will probably not be adequate right now, and yet I want to express them because that'll make this whole experience more real to me as I learn more about it. Anyway, with the responsibility to communication and the awarenesses that came from doing that whole process with you guys, I feel like I have gone under the surface that I had been playing with before. That when I did worksheets on my family, myself, you know, the whole being perfect thing, all of that jazz, it was really picking around at the surface. And it certainly helped because I got far enough in my development to be able to go deeper. So that's cool. And now I do feel like, wow, I am so much deeper into seeing what was underneath. And so anyway, that's the kind of awe that I'm experiencing right now.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's all that I have. And perhaps there's someone else who would like to get on for a minute.
Sweet.
Cool.
All right, young lady, appreciate you. Appreciate your courage and your willingness.
And I appreciate you so much, and Jeannie and everybody else who's doing the work. Okay, blessings. Bye-bye.
All right, blessings. Bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 11 minutes left. Do we have another hand up, or shall I go ahead and read? Are you mute challenged, Jeannie? Are you with us?
Oh, you know what? I got kicked off a while ago, and I had to dial back in, so I didn't unmute myself on the switchboard.
Okay.
There's no other hands up, and we've got about 10 minutes, so go ahead and do your reading.
Cool. So we are on, for those who are reading along with us, page 77, the bottom, in the chapter on Off the Mark. We've been talking to the character in the book, Richard, about blockage of truth, about the fact that the word sin is simply an archery term that means off the mark. It's got nothing what the Greeks told us about how guilty we are and all the garbage that goes with it. And Richard is starting to see past some of his own blocks, some of his own blockages, and opening to new information coming from his mind. So he says, threat, fear, guilt, manipulation, confusion, and overwhelm are disintegrative energies, pardon me, I'm saying this to him, are disintegrative energies that are at the root of most disease processes. The fact that there's a time delay between engaging in a destructive behavior and the diseases that are sure to follow hides the cause-effect relationship between the two. It is then easy to blame our diseases on outside forces like bacteria, viruses, and the like. More blame and projection. And Richard replies, well, I can hear myself making excuses for my diseases. I caught the latest bug. I couldn't possibly be anything I've done, he reflected, tongue-in-cheek. And then there's a key thought at this page in the passage. It says, it is your mind energy that is responsible for the condition of the tissue in your body. Louis Pasteur's final conclusion on disease, the germ is nothing, the terrain is all. And so in essence, what we're saying here, what Richard's starting to comprehend is this: the fact that this body-mind unit is an energy system, and that there are integrative energies that will uplift and disintegrative energies that will tear down and create disease. And so, you know, where Louis Pasteur says that the germ is nothing, the terrain is everything, is if the germ falls on healthy terrain, the germ will be digested and eliminated. If the germ falls on weakened, diseased terrain, because one has weakened themselves through hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, trauma, junk food, junk thinking, junk living, then they've weakened their terrain. And, you know, there's an old saying that if you feed them, they will come. If there's a lot of decay going on in tissue because of the disintegrative energy patterns that we hold to, then there's a food supply for the bacteria, for the virus, for, you know, the fungus, whatever it is that's growing. So if you stop feeding it, in other words, if you clean up the energy system and you engage only in what is integrative to the system, then you'll find that the whole game changes and that we have a whole lot more to do with creating our diseases than we've been taught. And therefore, we have a whole lot more power in healing what we call our diseases. And healing looks like what qualities of energy have I engaged in based in hostility or fear that have degraded my terrain? And what do I need to process out? You know, as we've been talking with Magda, you know, the perceptual mind, you know, when we're thinking about projection communication versus responsibility communication. Projection communication is, look what you've done to me, and this is your fault. Responsibility communication is, oh, here I am once again in this same old boat, and I don't like it. And so I'm going to start to look at the truth of how I got in the boat. What was it? What is it I'm engaging in that takes me into a dis-ease condition? Am I willing to face, you know, what is it? Rage, fear, hate, vengeance? Am I willing to face that energy, hold it in a mind connected to love and process through it? Or am I going to keep pretending that it's all somebody else's fault? And as long as I keep pretending that it's somebody else's fault, I have to hide from myself the part of my mind that's most in need of healing. And when I tell my mind to hide that part of me, what is telling the mind to hide a part of me look like? So let's say I'm in anger and I say, you made me really angry. What I just said to my mind is, so mind, you are no longer allowed to tell me the truth that I'm the one who's angry, which of course would mean I could resolve it. You have to tell me a lie. And the hallucinated lie that you have to tell me is that somebody out there did it to me and it's their fault. So I create a whole hallucinogenic world where the truth is hidden, and I get to see a fantasy. And when I try to communicate out of that fantasy, out of that hallucination, I'm always communicating a lie, and I will never clean up my mind. When I start to shift out of that mode of operation that you made me and start to own, yeah, here I am again feeling this sadness, this grief, this rage, this loss, when I can take a breath and give my mind permission to show me that that's mine, then my mind will begin to show me things that, you know, for most people, when they start to look, they're like, wow, I never knew there was such things going on in my mind. And it sure doesn't feel good to touch into it on one hand, but on the other hand, I can feel the energy shift happening because I'm finally looking at the truth. And here's what occurs. When you bring the truth to love, if the truth holds pain, pain heals. The energy dynamic is changed, and healing occurs. So, in essence, that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to make available on a global scale. Functioning as human beings out of the active presence of love and making sure that our minds are powered by that active presence of love 24/7, 365. And so that's where we're going with this work, and we're honored and delighted that you're along with us for the ride. And we're down to about 5 minutes, so we've got time for another conversation. If somebody out there has a thought, question, an answer, push one. Let's have a conversation. If you happen to be on one of those stations where we can't see you, that means that you can't communicate with us directly. And if you call into the show using the number 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then if you push one, through the magic of technology, that puts a hand up in the phone queue, and you and I will be having a conversation. And I would love to have a conversation with you. How can we support you? What's on your mind? So, Michelle, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
No, it's all quiet. We are down to just under 3 minutes.
No, go for it. Please, sweetie.
I was just going to say, you know, during our process, I don't know if I said this the other day when we were talking about it, but what I realized was that it was almost like I was a split personality, and there was part of me that when it went into fear, then the other part of me came out roaring like a T-Rex to protect myself. And so I've been doing some worksheets around the T-Rex.
Uh-huh. And how's that processing?
Oh, good. It's good. That's just realizing, you know, it just is a part that needs to be healed, and we're working on it. And
Yeah. Sweet. Well, it's amazing when we can shift the language, you know, realizing that the perceptual mind receives its instructions from language, and when I'm in the T-Rex mode of look what you've done to me, my mind has to show me that you're the one who did it. When I come out of the T-Rex mode into responsibility and own it and say, well, here I am, I've been through this experience 87 different times with 42 different people, then I can start to open to the root thought disorders and bring them forward and heal them, and just everything changes. I mean, everything. Quite amazing. So thank you for joining me on this journey, dear heart.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. We're blessed. We are blessed. So we appreciate everybody who joins us each day that you join us. And, you know, if you haven't tapped in and used the app yet, is the iPhone app uploaded now, Jeannie?
It has been uploaded, but according to the tech, he said that it can take up to 3 days for Apple to approve everything. And I am having a few issues with Google. They're now saying that I didn't have a privacy statement on it, and I do. So I've submitted a request for them to change their mind. So, but we're getting there.
Okay. Cool. So it might take a day or two or three for both the Apple and the Google phones,
Android
system to be updated, but we've got a new app, significant changes. The commitment in several different forms is in there, along with some upgrades and corrections on the rest of the app. So go to your app store, and maybe not today, but tomorrow, the next day, type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And you'll be looking at Jeannie's the only created the forgiveness app in the world. So thank you, Jeannie. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.